Good to know. Thank you. You'll notice the photo in the slide that's up there now. It's just simply talking about my view of of listening is a lot like two partners dancing, and more ballroom dancing than the more modern dancing you might see in clubs. Because I don't think folks communicate at all in those, do they? No? Okay. Well, at any rate, so the photo is just to show the two people probably by their body language are not communicating. However, I really believe that it's a lot like any interpersonal relationship. You really have to be attuned to the other person and either follow their lead or perhaps add leadership through effective listening. And, of course, some listeners are better than others. This is my favorite, absolute favorite photo to use when we're talking about listening, because as you can see, this Basset Hound is using just about everything that she's got to try to figure out what's going on. She's got her ears up, her eyes are focused. I'm sure if it were in a video, her nose would be twitching. She's using all of her senses, and I think that's good advice for us. Okay. We did a couple things. One is I sent out an assessment, and I was wondering what your thoughts are about the assessment. And you're welcome to either just start talking and just say, you know, hi, this is Dana, and this is what I thought about my results, or anyone else could. Crickets. I should have a cricket photo up. No.
Hey, Bill, this is Carol. One thing I'd say about my results on the assessment is that whenever I do things like that, it really makes me think deeply about the things that I don't do that I know I should do. Because we, not only a student of listening, but also one who teaches this skill and one who had a full semester course in listening, as a matter of fact, when I take something like that, it does call to my attention that I am not an excellent listener. I think I'm better than I used to be and that everything was useful, but there's, you know, I'm a good listener, not as good as I could be.
Yes, Carol, thanks. Bill, again, I found going through the assessment that first of all, that the results are very similar to the same assessment I took a few months ago, and I'm subject to distraction. And that's consistent with feedback that I've gotten from others and also from my own awareness that I have to be very, very careful to listen intently and to avoid the shiny objects or things that sort of distract me.
I wonder if people on the call, Bill, have the experience of having to attend many sessions like this, you know, on the phone, at your desk, in your office, where you may not be able to block out all of the distractions. Is that common to those of you who are listening in today?
This is Charlotte, and yes, I have. I do a lot of teleconferences and so forth, so but I will say, to your point, Carol, that when I first started, it was a bit of a challenge just getting used to that medium, but now I love it, and it depends, I guess, but I find myself, if I can take notes or different things, or if it's an engaging discussion, rather than, you know, simply an engaging presentation, I don't find myself as distracted, but I've noticed when it's something that's more a presentation and you're simply listening, there are opportunities to find yourself wondering.
Yeah, too much delivery on the part of the sender and too little interaction. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Well, not so much. Not that that's a problem, because there are some presentations that are just structured that way, where you're simply in listen mode, so you're not on the speaker or anything like that. But it's, I think it's just the fact that you are listening for such a consistent period of time. And I guess naturally your mind starts to wander, and then you have to remind yourself, wait, I really need to pay attention.
Yeah, I find it's always a challenge. I used to work on a team that was located in California, and so my main method of communication was telephone and email and internet, and I really had to develop some skills around listening in meetings that took place in that manner.
That's good discussion. Whenever, you know, it's tough to do this on webinars, but I find that if I'm in a telephone conversation, turning off the screen on my computer is extremely helpful to avoid distraction.
Yeah, I used to find that the best thing I could do was get away from my desk because my desk is so filled with distractions.
Yeah, cordless phone is helpful. Go to some place and sit down and look at a wall or something.
Mm-hmm.
You're sort of engineering the space. I put a second question on the screen. Can you describe a situation where poor listening led to some serious consequences? Anyone like to volunteer one? I'll give you an example this morning. I went to the dentist. I lost a tooth, and they were going to put in something that's referred to as an implant. And they... I thought today, it was in my mind today, that it was just a checkup to see how things were going. And when I got there, they started using a local anesthetic. And I said, what are you folks doing? And they said, well, we're going to do the implant today. And I said, no, you're not. They said, yeah, we are. And after I got the needles finished and everything, I said, well, I really can't do that. And they said, why not? And I said, well, I have a teleseminar at 1 o'clock, and I'm teaching it. A class this evening at 5 o'clock, and they said, "Well, you can't do that." So we had a discussion, but apparently, I just did not hear the last time because they went to their notes. The dentist did and said, "Yeah, here are my notes. This is what we had planned to do today." So had I not interjected, I think we probably would have had to postpone this, or actually, Carol could have done a wonderful job, but I wouldn't be here. Anyone have any stories to share with us? Okay. Well, let's go to the next slide then. Just a little comment about the process. You know, the sender often encodes a message and transmits it in one way or another. I wanted to mention sender encoding simply because that's one of the things that the listener has to do is to decode in order to be an effective listener. And sometimes the encoding can be jargon. Sometimes it can be the way the words are phrased or the sentences are constructed, possibly with a view of how the person thinks, the thought processes. Some folks are inductive, some folks are deductive, some folks like to start with the big picture, some folks like to start with the specific issue and then add in things as the listener requests.
You know, Bill, what comes up for me when you're talking about coding is how you'll sometimes hear men and women talk about, oh, he talks a different language. You know, males talk a different language than women do, and it's because we do code things differently.
Can you give me an example, Carol?
Well, for example, typically, and we all know I'm generalizing here and generalizations can be faulty, but typically women will use a lot of language such as, well, I feel that instead of I think that. And men hear that differently than they hear that rational mind statement, I think, for example. And women don't realize that. We tend to think that when we say, well, I feel that the company should initiate this policy for the good of the employees, there's something in the decoding that goes on that's different for males than it is for females. The males hear that feel word, and they tend to think of it as too touchy-feely, not practical, not applicable, not statistically based, so on and so forth. I mean, that's one of the things that comes up a lot in business. So one of the things that I coach women on is try to take some of that out of your language. You may feel that your employees deserve to be treated in a different way. If so, let's gather some statistics about what the productivity will be, and let's go into that room and say, you know, for the good of our employees, we need to do this, this, and this, and the results will be, and give the statistics.
Okay. So you're also saying that when in this example, when a male listens to that, I feel that, the listener is not decoding it at all. It's just accepting it as this is how they feel, that there's possibly no statistical, there's no metrics behind it.
Right. And they may also, without even being totally conscious of it, downplay the metrics because of the different code that we're using as we put that out there.
Okay. I use the feel a lot as well, so I'm going to have to check into that. And what I'll do is I'll check with some listeners to see what their reaction or what their thought processes was when I said feel, and I'll ask them on a basis, did they think that I was saying that because I didn't have data, or just as a gut reaction, or whether or how they perceived it. That's a good point. I'll try that, Carol.
Yeah, and I think that there's a difference, too, in even saying, well, my gut tells me. That would be a more male statement.
Yeah.
Whereas when women say feel, it's my heart tells me.
Yeah. I try to avoid gender specific characteristics as much as possible.
So, And
I'm not criticizing you. I was leading into a textbook that I'm using for a human relations course I'm teaching. Says that males tend to speak in terms to gain status, and that women speak to try to enhance communication and to, I guess, facilitate mutual understanding. And I thought that's about as broad a category as I've heard.
Right. And you're right to use the word tend, because people are individuals, and we run on that full spectrum, whether we're male or female.
Good one. Well, let's look at some of the listening process. We know that that effective communication certainly depends on good listening, and we know how fast our brain works as opposed to how slowly the speaking process works, and that leads to distractions. And more than that, it leads to, I guess it's a distraction. It's using that extra brain power, that extra cognitive activity, which hopefully to better understand the conversation, but it can also be a distraction. And the other distraction is the environmental ones, this fast-paced climate that we're in and the ability to communicate so quickly. I mentioned the computer because I have in the past developed a very bad listening habit of listening and then also responding to email simultaneously. What did we do before email?
We actually communicated.
I think we may have, or at least
on different levels. And if you think of the listening process, we're talking about using our all of our senses if we're one-on-one with somebody, face-to-face, because it's not just ears. We take in a lot of the information through our eyes, and what we see will modify what we hear.
You bet. And, again, the nonverbal things, posture, that sort of thing, facial expressions, you bet. And in the slide I have up now, we talked that really communication and active listening is both parties be involved in the verbals and the nonverbals. Absolutely. We talked a little bit about barriers to communications. I have some on the screen now that were in the handout. However, I wanted to talk a little bit about the ones on the internal I've added a couple. I've added four at the bottom. One is information overload. And often maybe it's information, maybe it's sensory overload, and perhaps it's to-do list overload. Anyone find themselves just feeling very tense when they're trying to figure out everything that has to get done, how they're going to prioritize it, and then try to listen to someone else who maybe has a concern or a question that isn't on that priority list?
I would say that's one of my biggest barriers to listening. It's because I sometimes feel myself getting to a point where I just want to say, no, don't ask me for one more thing. I can't take on anything else. You know, my mind doesn't even want to let anything else in.
The other three are filtering, gender, and culture. Filtering, I had a professor once that told me that we all wear invisible glasses, and through those glasses we filter some of the things we see and a lot of the things that we hear. In other words, we don't all give the same meaning to words. He gave the example of the word power and said that if you look into a traditional dictionary, after the indications about how to pronounce the word, there's usually a parenthesis and the derivation. It might be OF for old French, or OE for old English, rather, NF for northern France, or L for Latin. The word power originally meant to be able. And yet I've asked folks what they thought power meant, and generally it has to do with somebody being able to make somebody do something. So we do have filters. Gender, Carol did a great job describing the gender barrier, which I'm sure exists, absolutely, and also some cultural barriers to listening and also to responding. Can anyone give me an example of cultural differences in how people interact in a conversation?
I could cite an example from my past. My first husband, who passed away 20 years ago, we were married for 21 years, and humor never became exactly the same in the family, and there were often differences that could cause little flare-ups because there were sensitivities there about some of the things that the kids would say, because, you know, our kids were raised here in America. He was from India. And they were not nearly as respectful to him as the head of the household, male, you know, as he had grown up used to. And so he would hear their comments from a totally different context and get very, very upset with them for their lack of respect, whereas I would laugh.
And they did, meant no disrespect.
No.
It was simply how they'd been acculturated to respond,
Exactly. You know, we would say things that we thought were funny, and he would feel ganged up against because our culture was approaching him in a way that was inappropriate in his culture.
Yes, I did some work in the UK, and a couple of the folks that I spent some time with, coworkers, English folks, and they were saying that they really thought I was. It may be just me personally, but they said, are all Americans so straightforward and outspoken? And I said, geez, most of the ones I know are, and I think that they're more reticent to comment. And perhaps express their feelings generally. So, yeah, there are some cultural issues, absolutely. And
you even find the difference in that between Midwesterners and, say, New Yorkers, for example.
Well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that. I have my best friend lives in Arizona, but he was from the East Coast. He's been there about 10 years, and we speak twice a week. Thank goodness for Verizon linked, you know, friends and family or whatever. At any rate, I find now that he pauses for a long time after I've completed a sentence, And I've said, you know, Lane, are you there? And he said, yeah, I'm just listening. And what he's learned from, I guess, the folks that he lives with around in Arizona is that you're not quick to follow up the other person's sentence. You want to wait a moment to make sure that they're finished speaking, which I thought is amazing. That's another cultural thing. He used to just speak as quickly as we did and absolutely step on each other's conversations, but he doesn't do it anymore. But it's making me more aware that I need to listen and then pause for a moment to make sure that the person has gotten all their thoughts out. Great. The next slide is listening skills. We look at what are good listening skills and what poor listeners do. And this is pretty straightforward. As we know, we all know it, but often circumstances, our own thought processes, our emotions, and the environment overcome it. So I suspect it's a journey.
I think one of the things that comes up for me based on both of the slide before and that one is that we really have to take personal responsibility for communication. Mm-hmm. For example, on those external factors that you had two slides, or just the slide before this one that's up now, I think both the sender and the receiver in the communication process needs to own that. If there is noise, if there are interruptions, if there are distractions, and those can be auditory, they can be visual, they can be emotional, they can be hunger or a bad smell in the room. Anything can distract you from listening, and I think that both the sender and receiver have to create an environment that is appropriate for hearing the message that is being exchanged. And on the internal side, I think as listeners, we have to own the fact that we need to share our barriers at times and clear them in order to open ourselves to good listening.
I'm glad you mentioned clear, Carol, and I think we have at least three or four coaches on the line. And in the coaching training that I participated in, they taught us on each of the coaching, at the beginning of each coaching discussion, to clear the air, if you will. And what I will do with a coachee is simply to tell that person, I've got a lot of things on my mind right now. What I'm going to do is purposefully think about them, and I'm going to move them aside. And then I would ask the coachee to do the same thing. And I might mention a couple of mine. It's a great mental exercise to be present, and as you know, a coach needs to be present. However, the coachee also needs to be present, and I think that's a wonderful exercise. And I'm sure you all do that. We ask folks to be in a quiet place, a place where there might not be interruptions. We might ask them to disable call waiting, those sort of things, if we're speaking over the phone. So that's a great idea, Carol, and comment in terms of managing the environment and then manage our internal furies, if you will. Well said. Talking about barriers to active listening, I listed mine, and I was hoping some that you folks will also help me by listing yours. But through that whole list of barriers, thinking about something else while the speaker is still talking is probably, this is in priority order for me. This is the journey I'm on to avoid that and to be more focused. I sometimes get impatient with people who are around me, who are close to me, because I'm finishing their sentences and I'm saying, come on, get it out, or be more direct. I guess I'm being a guy. Dividing your attention. Doing too much, as I mentioned before, and again, not being an active listener. Those are mine. Could anyone look at that list on, or would you please look at the list on the handout that I sent to you? And see, I'm going to pull the page up right now. I believe that it is page three and four. We talk about what poor listeners do. as well as some of the barriers that start on page two. Would anyone like to share some of the ones that resonated with you? Okay.
My husband would say, go ahead, please.
Please.
Yeah, this is Dana, and I think, you know, it just reiterates the fact, you know, listening is a skill that has to be nurtured and developed. And as I look at the poor listening list that Bill provided in the information, I think I, too, can relate to the fact that, you know, there's a certain level of impatience that I personally feel when I'm in conversation. And, you know, you're aware of that when you try to interrupt and you want to catch yourself and go back into your listening mode. But I think getting impatient with the speaker, I can definitely relate to. And sometimes when you're around people who are extremely talkative, and I mean more circumstantial or tangential and kind of are scattered, it's very difficult to stay attending to the person. So I do become a little bit more closed-minded or not interested in what's being said then, because they go off on different tangents. So those were two areas that really resonated for me.
And they're great examples of how a professional like yourself, Dana, can fall victim to these barriers and the interferences. Absolutely. Do you use questions to try to get the speaker focused?
I think I try to go back to the initial topic and bring them back to the initial topic. Or if they are going at a pretty good clip, I may say, you know, is it okay if I interrupt? And I ask permission to interrupt and say, now what were we saying about this? So sometimes I may try to interject there, yes.
Yeah. I discovered studying sales for a program I was teaching that the open and closed-ended questions, the open-ended who, what, when, where, why, and how, that elicit, it's hard to answer with one or two words, generally will accelerate a conversation or at least a response, and that the closed-ended questions is, does, will generally get a yes or no or a choice between alternatives. And I found that that's more like a brake pedal. And I've got a friend who does exactly as you described, Dana, just goes, talks on and on and on. And I'll say, excuse me a sec, and I'll ask a closed-ended question. For example, does this happen frequently? And that person will say, well, yes. And I say, good. And then I'll use an open-ended question to try to steer them, like you do, back to where we were and try to get the person back on topic politely. Mm-hmm. But it's a way of steering the conversation in a polite way and to actually control with a lowercase c the exchange.
Yes, I agree. You know, the closed-ended questions are a way to get a shortened response or definitive information, where the open-ended question is going to just allow somebody to go where they want to go with stuff. So it's very useful to have some knowledge of that in the conversation.
You bet. And I haven't found anyone who takes offense at it either, so I'm going to continue to do it. I have to be careful, though, that I'm not being sort of prejudicial in my thinking, too, that perhaps this person is getting to the point, but I'm just so impatient that I've lost the string of the conversation. But that's me. And we just talked about our barriers. Let's look at dancing. And listening in my profession, as you can imagine, is very important. And I'm using the dancing as a metaphor, if you will. It's a way that I'm trying to be more focused and to be more tolerant and to follow the leads, or perhaps lead, as I just gave the example with the questions, the dance or the conversation. So, again, active listening is a lot like dancing. It's what you do with the speaker. It's a partnership. It's certainly interdependent, and I find that just as a great analogy. It's kind of interesting that I seem to run out of slides, Carol, and there's about 10 more.
Do you mean running out of time?
No, there's no slides left.
Oh, you have four more up here, it says to me. I see you're on slide 14.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, those doggone icons. I'm sorry, my apologies, folks. I'm looking at some icons, and they just ended. So let's look at the dance steps. And in terms of listening, the analogy here is adjusting our pace to theirs. And it's like my friend in Arizona. I'm finding that I talk really rapidly, and he doesn't now. He used to. So I'm finding out that if I adjust my pace and I put in the pauses, that the conversation goes much more smoothly. The following nonverbals, if we can see folks, or sometimes you can nonverbals or grunts, exhalations, sort of noises that folks can make that might tell you that they're interested. Or perhaps disagree, perhaps excited. Definitely giving encouragement, you dance beautifully. Or I'm really enjoying this conversation and I we're going to a really good place. Would you let me, let's continue in this direction. And in order to do all this, we really have to listen to the beat and we have to put aside our agendas. When I was an HR director, I had a benefits manager, a woman who had to lead. She was a twin, and I guess when she learned to dance, she and her twin sister, she led. And I found it really awkward when we danced at the Christmas party. Every year we'd have one dance, and she said, "You have to let me lead." And sometimes you have to, and it was awkward, but sometimes you have to let folks lead in the conversation too, even though you may know where it's going. And to follow that lead, again, try to be as smooth as possible. And if you get your toes stepped on, try to internalize it. If someone says something that perhaps might be off-putting or perhaps you're not sure how they meant it or you might disagree to a different level, that's either a time to stop and perhaps process some eye messages like, I really don't understand that last comment. Can you let me know a little bit more about it? And don't letting others cut in is absolutely about interruptions, both your mental interruptions and the environmental ones. Here's my journey. As part of my dancing lessons, I'm listening more than I talk. These are my four things from my Arthur Murray days. I'm going to listen more than I talk. I want to stay focused on the other person, and that's a real effort for me, not to be distracted by either the environment or my own thoughts. And resist the urge to dominate the conversation, which I feel like I'm doing now. However, I like to talk, and I like conversations, but I'm working very diligently and being very aware that I need to let the other person have some time. And finally, as I mentioned, not interrupting is important. I was wondering if anyone, as a result of either our discussion or looking at the handouts, and just revisiting listening, have you set some goals, some things that you'd like to do differently? I think Dana may have.
I think for me, it's again, being more cognizant of the process and paying attention, being more self-aware to my own level of impatience in that process and giving myself permission to just listen. I think going through the listening skill questionnaire you provided us, Bill, just allowed me, again, similar to what Carol was saying, to pay attention. You're going through those statements, and you're like, well, yeah, occasionally I do that. So it kind of gives you a gauge, if you will, about, you know, where you want to focus your efforts in your listening process.
You know, I think that's well said, and I've just made a mental note to put that on my calendar to about once a month to go over that process, maybe every 2 months, to take that inventory again to see how I'm doing. Good point. Shahzad, what do you think?
I think that's a wonderful tool, and I'm thinking definitely just to be reminded and consciously paying attention when you're talking with someone, and it depends too on what the situation is, what your discussion is. I think if you're with a client or with friends, or if I think there are some variations, but to still be aware that, you know, what are the appropriate ways that I can listen in this particular situation? What's my role? And just bringing yourself back to being in tune with the person and listening.
So, Bill, this is Carol.
Hi, Carol.
What would you think of using that assessment as sort of a 360, where you give it to the people you interact with most often and ask them to give you feedback based on how they assess your listening?
I think that's a great idea, and it would be interesting to follow up on Shahzad's comments that we might find different if we do it social with our social interactions as well as our business and professional interactions, I bet you we will get a different viewpoint. Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, true. Our spouses would be very interesting.
Do you have an example?
Well, my husband would say that I'm too busy to listen to him, or because I spend so much time at my desk and computer,
mm-hmm.
and that what I need to do is to make time or to break away from this, you know, more often, because this is like a magnet to me. You know, I love to be busy, and so it's typical for me after dinner in the evening to come right back to my computer and find something to write about or create or get on email or, you know, fill some time. So he would say, I'm too busy to listen, and I create that myself. And I would say of him, stop finishing my sentences. You know, we know each other too well, but please don't finish my sentences, because that's not where I'm going. I mean something else. That just happened the other night. I was telling him about something, and he starts finishing my thought, and his end was nothing like mine. I was going in a totally different direction, but he thought he knew what I was going to say. So,
how did you bring that to his attention?
I said, stop!
That's pretty direct.
Stop! That's not what I was going to say! Yeah, that's pretty direct. Now, had I been in a professional situation, I probably would not have said it in that tone of voice, but that's what I did with him.
Amazing. I have a son-in-law that gave my daughter a book of coupons that he made up on the computer, and they were for her to use to tell him to get off the computer and pay attention to her, or let's take a walk. I can't believe he did that, you know, and to this day, all the males in the family hate him for it, because he announced it, you know, at a family dinner, and of course, the rest of us were in big trouble. Having said that, that may be something that you might get to give your husband.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I should do that.
And then you can honor you have to honor the coupon when it's presented, of course.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
A good retailer, yeah. Okay. Well, we've come up on the end of our time. I'd like to ask if anyone has any best practices they'd like to share with us. we do have, we can always have some more time to talk, but I'd like to hear from you if each of you have one thing that you've found in your everyday life, in your education, on webinars that you'd like to share with us.
This is Dana, and the one thing that always resonates with me, Bill, is message sent is not always message received. That has stayed with me quite a long time, and I think that's one of the things that resonates with me around listening.
Great. I've written that down. Thank you. Good one.
I think for me, I remind myself often that an essential need of human beings is to be heard, and that it's important that I let people express themselves, even if I disagree with them, even if ultimately what they are saying to me is not going to make a huge difference. Just the act of listening and letting them know that I heard them, that I understand their point of view, and that I have some compassion for it, if it's something that I really can't fix for them or that I'm not going to change, but that I show some level of compassion and understanding and respect for their opinion, is more important than just about anything else I can give them.
Shazar, you are a great listener. We work together, for everyone else's knowledge, we work together on a committee, and I think she's an excellent listener. What would you recommend?
Thank you so much. You know, I think we all have moments where we don't do as well as we would like, and so I think it's just really being conscious of it and just thinking about, not all the time, but just periodically checking in with yourself and thinking, have you listened as well as you could have? And I very much agree with Carol's point. I think part of it is just having compassion and honor for the other person's humanity and recognizing that, you know, you just need to hear them. I mean, as she said, you don't have to agree with them, but just sometimes actively listening to what they have to say, even if you don't agree with it or change anything based on that, just giving them that space to do that's something that just really resonated with me when you said that. And the other thing, I'll just put a plug in for this wonderful kind of movement, is the StoryCorps from NPR, which is all about listening and giving people a place to tell their stories, and the book out of it, which is called Listening is an Act of Love. So I would just encourage you guys to take a look and see what you think. Go to NPR's StoryCorps website and take a listen. They have always these wonderfully moving stories, and the whole concept is that someone is taking the time to listen to what you have to say and recognizes that's important to you and kind of honors that in you.
Wow. Well said. Thank you.
Thank you.
And is that StoryCorps as in CORPS?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yes. And if you go to NPR, you should be able to find it, but they have their own separate freestanding website also.
Okay. .org or .com?
I think it's probably
.org. .org. Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure.
The last thing that I'd like to add, in the handout, I quoted, but not directly, but in Stephen Covey's book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, he does make a point that in order to be understood, we have to first demonstrate that we understand. And that's been etched indelibly in my mind. It's part of the listening process, as I see it, where I listen, and then I'll do a reflective comment just to make sure that, first of all, that I'm actually hearing what they're saying. The message, as Dana would say, is delivered. It's sent, and let me give you some feedback to say I think I've got it. The other thing a psychologist friend of mine mentioned was that people are more likely, if you do that reflective response and let them know that the message was delivered, they're more likely to listen to what you have to say than if you were just to respond. So So first we demonstrate that we understand before we can be understood. And with that, thank you all so much for joining us today. I appreciate it. Will Carol be speaking next month on the third Wednesday of the month? And on our we'll have the topic up on our website and also our information correspondence. So, again, thank you all very much. And I'm looking out the window now and away from the computer and seeing some snowflakes in Maryland.
And before you all panic over snow, I would just like to remind you that Bill and I both have websites where you can find out more about the services that we offer. We are independent of each other, though we often swap work. We, you know, in other words, we're both running our own business, and yet because of our respect for each other and our common values around work and our common ideas about, I think in training people and helping people to become better managers, we will often give assignments to each other that when we can't cover something, we recommend. So Bill's website is peoplebusiness.us, and my website is futurefocuscoaching.com. And on my website, I have a number of articles and also recordings from our previous teleseminars and other presentations. So just check out the articles page and the events and recordings page, and the calendar's there with events and recordings, too, so you can see what's coming up in the future. So thank you, everybody, and thank you, Bill, for a great presentation.
Carol, what's your website again? I didn't get all that.
It's futurefocuscoaching.com.
Futurefocuscoaching. All right. Well, thank you both.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Bye now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.